You're listening to The Martial Brain, the podcast that explores the intersection between the martial arts, science, critical thinking, skepticism, and that wacky organ that floats inside our skull in a pool of cerebrospinal fluid, making life unpredictably inspiring, infuriating, and sometimes just batshit crazy. I'm Jeff Westfall for The Martial Brain. Death by Ideology. Lysenkoism Then and Now. The Martial Brain is a non-ideological, apolitical, data-driven podcast. One of my goals in producing it is to strictly adhere to the available data when discussing a subject. If I do my job correctly, the points that I try to make will not reflect my personal position on politics or religion. Just as an investigator might be guided by the cliched instruction to follow the money, I try hard to be guided by the motto, follow the data, whether I like where it leads or not. Many people's decision-making process is driven by ideology. Their ideology, whether derived from politics, socioeconomics, or religion, guides them towards what they want to be true, or what they think should be true. They then engage in confirmation bias as data comes to light, ignoring the data that conflicts with their ideology and cherry-picking that which does not. The decision-making process of a good scientific skeptic is driven by data and critical thinking, disregarding any personal biases. Most folks decide what they think about an issue when an ideological leader suggests to them or even tells them what to think. This succeeds because so many people are intellectually lazy, unwilling to take the time and make the effort to research the facts for themselves. It's hard to find a better example of ideology having more power over a society than the Soviet Union during the rule of the brutal dictator Joseph Stalin. One story that illustrates this is the story of Lysenkoism. You see, by the late 1920s, the various republics of the Soviet Union, especially Russia, had a number of well-educated biologists, zoologists, botanists, agronomists, and geneticists. But one agronomist named Trofim Lysenko made it well known in scientific and political circles that, in his opinion, biology and genetics as taught by the intellectual descendants of Charles Darwin and Gregor Mendel was corrupted by bourgeois ideology. The idea that one organism can experience a mutation that makes it better suited to adapt to changing conditions smacked of elitism to Lysenko. He felt that evolution and modern biology didn't fit in with Marxist ideology. He rejected the existence of the gene and of natural selection. Let's use the Wayback Machine and go back in time a bit. In the mid-1800s, when Charles Darwin introduced the concept of evolution through natural selection in his groundbreaking masterwork, The Origin of Species, he wasn't offering his ideas into a vacuum. There were already, and had long been, various claims about how organisms change over time. There was a lot of support for the ideas of an earlier scientist named Jean-Baptiste Lamarck. Lamarck asserted that species change when an individual of that species experienced, or even through its own efforts, caused change in itself in its own lifetime, and then passed those changes on to its offspring. The classic example used when explaining Lamarck's claims is that of a giraffe stretching its neck up as high as it could to eat leaves that other animals couldn't reach. As the giraffe repeated this behavior, its neck actually grew a bit longer, at least according to Lamarck, allowing it to reach previously unreachable leaves. The giraffe then passed on this acquired characteristic, a slightly longer neck, to the next generation of its young. According to Lamarck, generation upon generation of stretching giraffes produced the modern long-necked specimen. Darwin then came along and said, "No, that's not what the data shows." After decades of meticulous and exhaustive research, he published his magnum opus, which asserted that species change not through the efforts of individual specimens during their lifetimes, But when individual specimens are born with new traits that allow them to better adapt to stresses in the environment, and they then pass those new traits on to their offspring. Time proved Darwin to be right and Lamarck to be wrong. Getting back to Lysenko, he felt that, despite the evidence, Lamarck's earlier hypothesis fit in much better with Marxist ideology. The work ethic of the giraffe straining its neck to reach the higher branches appealed to him. It was like an idealized version of the hard-working members of the proletariat, the working class. Hard work was rewarded with growth, both for the individual and the species. The mechanism proposed by Darwin relied on the occasional lucky individual being gifted at birth with a new trait that helped the individual adapt to environmental challenges, to survive, and to procreate. Getting ahead through an accident of birth was reminiscent to Lysenko of the recently overthrown royalty and nobility who had oppressed the peasants of Russia for centuries. Darwin's ideas smacked of elitism. Lysenko also rejected the concept of natural selection, replacing it with the more politically correct concept of natural cooperation. I think anyone who has watched nature documentaries has seen just how much various species cooperate with one another. Once the preachings of Lysenko reached the ear of dictator Joseph Stalin, his fortune was assured. Stalin loved Lysenko's ideas. They fit the Stalinist narrative of how things should be. He supported the ideas and the man for the more than two decades he had yet to live. The fruit of this promotion, of the marriage of unlimited political power with ideologically warped pseudoscience, was disastrous. With Stalin's blessing, Lysenko saw to it that more than 3,000 biologists in the Soviet Union were either fired from their jobs, sent to prison, or executed for their counter-revolutionary views on genetics. Any real research into genetics ground to a halt and didn't really resume until the mid-1960s. Research into many other branches of the life sciences, like neurobiology and cellular biology, was also ceased or drastically curtailed. In 1948, the entire field of genetics was declared by the government to be a bourgeois pseudoscience. Lysenkoism continued to be the only approved approach to biology, not only in the Soviet Union, but in all the other communist nations as well, until being quietly abandoned in the mid-1960s. But the damage had been done. Millions of Soviet citizens suffered malnutrition or starved to death when Lysenkoism failed to sufficiently improve crop yields. The study of genetics in Soviet bloc countries fell far behind that of the rest of the world, in most cases by about a half century. Even today, half a century after Lysenkoism fell out of favor, the level of Russian genetics is still far lower than here in the West. The martial arts also have a history of rationality being overpowered by ideological thinking. The ideology can be expressed when a technique, concept, or training method does not fit the narrative which the authority figure thinks it should. For example, there are martial artists who still debate the tired old question of the value of hard styles versus soft styles. So-called hard styles stress the importance of strong stances and powerful blocking and striking. I like my structure to be strong at certain times, and I find it useful to be able to strike with power. Does that make me a hard stylist? So-called soft styles emphasize fluid motion and yielding to powerful attacks before flowing back with counterattacks. Well, that sounds good to me too, at least for certain situations. Am I then a soft stylist? If we are speaking in purely practical terms, I am either, depending on the situation. If we are speaking ideologically, I am neither. Many people who identify as hard stylists would find it unseemly, indeed they would find it unmanly, to practice a soft style. They may rationalize these feelings by saying that soft styles lack the power to do the job, but in many cases it is simply that soft styles don't project the masculine image they wish to project. Thus, a macho ideology can become more important than whether or not the art is effective for self-defense. One of my earliest martial arts teachers was definitely of the macho, hard-style school of thought. He was devoted to producing tough students. Now, I actually share that devotion with him, but I strongly differ with him on what constitutes toughness. He felt that drinking water or any other liquids during a workout was a sign of weakness. This was actually a common belief among American athletic coaches up until at least the 1970s. But research proved well before then that athletes performed much better when they stayed hydrated. As a matter of fact, this research led directly to the first development and marketing of commercial sports drinks, starting with Gatorade in 1965. My teacher, though, would have none of it. "I don't give a good goddamn what research shows," he loudly asserted. "It'll be a cold day in hell when I let my students turn into a bunch of pussies. If you want to drink during your workout, go join a health spa." Many people who identify as soft stylists would find it distasteful to practice a hard style. They may rationalize their feelings by saying hard styles are crude, wasteful of energy, and inefficient. But in many cases, it is simply that hard styles project an image that is barbaric, maybe even overly violent, instead of the pacifist, elegant, and civilized image the soft stylist might wish to project. Another feature of many soft styles is the belief in the integral importance of the alleged, but in my opinion unproven, internal energy called qi or ki. Many assert, in my opinion without sufficient evidence, that a softer style is more conducive to the cultivation and utilization of this purported form of energy. Thus, two different ideologies, that of belief in qi and that of being non-aggressive and civilized, can, in the case of soft styles, become more important than the facts as to whether or not the style works in combat. Any martial arts style can easily become more of an ideology than a pathway to the truth if you're not careful. If you feel the need to prove that your style is superior to other styles, you're placing the ideology of style above the pursuit of the truth as it applies to the martial arts. One response some people might give to the points I've made is that the examples I gave were examples not of letting ideology trump science, but of having the wrong ideology. Lysenko's problem was that he was a communist loser, they might assert. But replacing one ideology with another is not the answer. Lysenkoism was not a problem of the wrong ideology. Such problems occur when any ideology is allowed to contradict and suppress evidence-based inquiry. Whether it's people on the far left who are against vaccinating their children, or those on the far right who deny climate change, ideology blinds all kinds of people to the data that are right there for all to see. Anyway, that's what I think. But I could be wrong. Let me know what you think, or check out old episodes of the Martial Brain podcast at my website, rpmartialarts.com. I'm Jeff Westfall for the Martial Brain. The Martial Brain is produced by Raging Squirrel Productions in association with the Rising Phoenix Martial Arts Academy. If you like the podcast and would like to help it grow, go to iTunes or Stitcher and give it an honest rating and review. Contact me with questions about the Martial Brain or the Rising Phoenix Academy at our website, rpmartialarts.com.